I am Bob McCallum. He is John Shannon. And together we are...
Old. But yes.
Well over 100 years between us.
Hold on now. Let me do the math.
Yeah, you're right.
Actually,
it's sad, isn't it?
We're close. No, we're not. We're almost at 90 years in the business, Bob.
Well, somebody sent me
90 years in the business.
Somebody sent me a message on Messenger. Which makes sense, right?
It does.
And in it was a tape of a show that I did on Sportsline in 1982.
Oh, yeah.
Which is 39 years ago.
Hey, Bob, I turned the TV on and on a couple of channels watch games that I produced in 1979, 1980.
Yeah, but nobody can see you. We don't know what you look like. I assume you probably looked about the same.
Oh, no, I was much better looking.
Yeah, well, I'll ask Mickey. Anyway, who is John's wife, by the way? You can look at me because I was on camera and with full beard too.
Oh, I know you. And you had the John Travolta white suit too, didn't you?
Not on this episode.
Did you have the vest sewed right into the pants?
No, I didn't. I had a red jacket on.
Really?
And a gigantic white poof that was enormous. And for reasons that I can't totally explain. Anyway, you could probably find it out there if you wanted to look hard enough. So we commence today with another Olympic gold medal winner. And how intriguing. Now, I know that the signature event of the Olympics is supposed to be the 100-meter dash.
Correct.
But you can make the argument that the race for speed really is the 200, not the 100.
Well, we can make that argument now that we won it.
Well, I think you could have made it at any time before. The Americans have made that argument many times in the past, especially when Americans win the 200.
Was it Michael Johnson? Michael Johnson?
Well, there's one.
He was spectacular.
In any event, so Andre DeGrasse wins the 200 meters, yesterday? I can't even remember what day it is.
Yeah.
And this morning, Damian Warner not only wins a gold medal, he gets to 9,000 points, only the fourth man in history to achieve 9,000 points in the decathlon. An extraordinary story. Extraordinary.
It's interesting, the focus of the Olympics, how it's changed, because if you remember 1976, I would tell you that one of the dominant stories of the Montreal Olympics, when we were just kids, was Bruce Jenner.
Sure.
And Jenner winning the decathlon and creating his image based on what he did in Montreal. And the world talked about the world's greatest athlete, Bruce Jenner.
Hard to argue.
And so here we should be touting, you know, Damian Warner as the world's greatest athlete.
You're not going to get an argument from me. I mean, it's extraordinary to see these athletes excel in one particular element or sport. To do 10.
Right.
And I know they are somewhat related. There's a couple of running things, but there's strength and there's speed and there's jumping.
Agility, yeah.
Absolutely. There's like
the other thing was for Warner, his biggest of the 10, his biggest issue had been for the longest time the pole vault. And he did an amazing job at the end of day one in the pole vault. And that really, sorry to use a pun, but catapulted him and maintained that number one position through the first half of the decathlon. So it's just fantastic.
Well, you're not sorry at all for that pun. It was intentional and we understand that. It was the apology that was insincere. Now
you sound like my wife.
You know, you hearken back. I'm sitting watching this morning Warner perform, and I hearken back to my high school days, because one of the intriguing things about high school is that I don't know whether it's the same now, But when you went for gym class, phys ed, if you will, they taught you all of these disciplines.
Everything.
Now, the only thing I never did was the pole vault, and I don't think we did pole vault. I don't think my school had a pole. So I don't think we did that. But everything else,
How was your shot put in your discus?
Crummy.
Oh, okay.
I could never figure out when to release the discus if I had to spin. My high jump was okay. But back then we did the roll, and then the Fosbury flop came along, and that changed everything.
It did.
But that was long after my high jumping days. Well, I only had about two of them, by the way.
I'm not
long jump. You know, these are all, you know,
we did it all.
Yeah. Run the 100 meters, run the track once around the track, four times around the track, whatever it happens to be. You did all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
but but we are in an age of specialty, Bob. That's what the world has become.
Well, isn't that intriguing?
Age of specialty. So the people that do multiple disciplines
stand out.
They don't get near the attention. I mean, even how they covered the decathlon the last 2 days, it was all based on highlights. I mean, the magic about DeGrasse at the 100, DeGrasse at the 200, Penny Oleksiak in the pool was we watched it live and boom. But they do the decathlon, it's all taped packages. It's all, you know, because it takes so long to actually do the 10 disciplines.
You know, you had 24 or whatever competitors, and you got all these different disciplines, and then you got times to set up in between and whatever. Anyway, I got a chance to watch the 50. I don't know if you watched the 1500 this morning. And I got a chance to watch that. And by about a second and a half or so, Warner managed to get over 9,000 points. Yeah, and it was terrific. Terrific. And congratulations to him. Now, this is all the preamble. We have a guest.
What?
Randy Ambrosi is the commissioner of the Canadian Football League.
And today's Christmas Day.
They are about to relaunch. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go through what they went through and where they are now. And we're going to talk about the changing of one of their franchise's names, specifically in Edmonton, and what's the status of the XFL partnership. Lots to talk about. The commissioner of the CFL, Randy Ambrosi, when we come back after these messages. Once again, McCowan, Shannon, and with us today, the commissioner of the Canadian Football League, Randy Ambrosi, is with us. Well, often around this time of year, actually a little earlier than this time of year, we get together with you or one of your predecessors and say, welcome back. It's been a little longer this time. When's the last time you guys played a football game?
Well, I guess Grey Cup 2019 in Calgary. It was a good game. It's been a while. Nice to be, you know, heading back to the field tonight. It should be a great game, you know, Winnipeg against Hamilton, the Grey Cup rematch. So, it's long overdue.
Randy, since the last time you were on, you were still trying to get government funding. How has the last 14 months gone in trying to restructure this league to make sure that you could be safe and entertaining at the same time? For this 14-game schedule?
Well, you know, there's a lot of complexity, John, to be honest, about, you know, all the things that we've been working on the business side of the league. We've, we haven't had success, in our government conversations. But you know what? You can't stop your feet and call it a day. So, you know, we took it on ourselves. We've basically restructured a lot. We've really streamlined a lot of things around the league. So that was really positive. But while all of that was going on, you know, to really set ourselves up for the future, you know, we had to look at, how would we have a 2021 season? And of course, a million questions, most of them, in the moment going back months ago, were very difficult to answer. But we found a way, you know, 9 teams very committed to playing this season. And we had a great health and safety committee. We've got one of the really excited changes at the league is we now have two health officers in the form of Dr. Bob McCormick from Vancouver and Dr. Nadeau from Edmonton. That's really helped us. Look, it's just been a lot of hard work from a lot of really great people that led to getting us back on the field.
One of the financial issues would be sponsorship. How have you made out with bringing your sponsors back? What kind of percentages are you looking at?
Well, Bob, I don't have exact percentages to quote, but what I can tell you is our sponsors have been amazing. We've gotten so much support from that community, frankly, from our season ticket and our fan base to really help see us through. So we've done incredibly well in getting our sponsorship renewals. From all nine teams, we've just saw an amazingly positive reaction from all of our, from all of our key stakeholders to support us. And, we thank them. And now we're looking forward to putting an entertaining 21 season on the table and then, build from here.
You talked about your health and safety, Randy. How would the consumer notice it? Or is it a good thing that they won't notice it?
Well, I don't think to the fan they'll see all that much of it. I mean, look, basically what happens is we have what we call our tier one group, and they're subject to a lot of stringent restrictions around, the way they interact with the marketplace, really. And we did that in consultation with public health officials so that the more you can isolate that group and insulate them from the broader market, the greater likelihood you have of not introducing the COVID virus into our football ecosystem. So, I think the average fan won't see a lot of change. Myself, for example, I would have been down on the field tonight saying, wishing everyone well. I would have wished our officials well none of that'll happen because we got to basically stay away from them and let them play football tonight. And that'll be the way it'll be for most of the season.
What was the challenge of dealing with, I think, six different public health authorities?
Well, really, John, the credit goes to our health and safety committee, two people who I would think I, would want to shout out in addition to our chief medical officers. Greg Dick, who runs our football operations group, and Wade Miller, the president of the Bombers, just did an amazing job of collaborating with all six jurisdictions. There was a tremendous willingness to collaborate. We got a lot of support from the public health community. I actually had a chance to visit with Dr. Bonnie Henry last night, and we were just talking about how the medical community, the public health officials really did rise to the challenge of working with us and helping us. So, in that way, we're very thankful.
What percentage of your players, coaches, will go into this season unvaccinated?
Well, we put out a report, Bob, a couple of days ago. There, it ranges. There's some teams are well through the 85% threshold and others less so. We put in place a policy for canceled games that really is trying to create an incentive for everyone to want to be vaccinated to the greatest extent possible. The 85% is important because it's the threshold that public health and our medical community feel is the point at which you really have significantly reduced your exposure to the, to the COVID crisis, and we simply want to keep it out of the locker room. So we've got some work to do. We've got several teams that are below the 85% threshold, and we're going to continue to work with them day in and day out to see if we can't convince as many people to get vaccinated so we can keep our locker room safe.
There are some people that wouldn't be familiar with what you have decided about cancellations and postponements. Can you explain it?
Yeah, essentially it is designed to really incent the teams to want to get as many of their tier one personnel vaccinated. Essentially what we said is that, in the event that a game has to get canceled and our priority would be to reschedule. If we had a COVID outbreak in a locker room, we would choose to try to reschedule, but rescheduling in football is very difficult. If we don't, if we're not successful in rescheduling, a team that is, if a team is the team that has the problem in their locker room, would be handed a loss, and the team who were affected by that cancellation would get a 1-0 win. And again, the idea is simple. Let's try to encourage everybody to help get us through the season without a COVID outbreak. One of the things we did in terms of player compensation is we've said if a locker room of players is more than 85% vaccinated and we have to cancel a game, the players will get paid. And if we're below that 85% threshold, then they won't. And again, it was designed to light a fire and really hope to get everybody engaged in wanting to get their vaccinations, because we know from everything, all of the John, you're seeing it, that Bob, you're seeing it. We know that getting vaccinated is a way to keep that Delta variant out of the locker rooms.
I admire the initiatives that you've taken. But here's a question I don't think asked anybody yet. Let me put it in this context. If I were Randy Ambrosio, the first thing I'd consider doing is saying, if you're not vaccinated, you don't play. And yet I do understand that this is a personal decision, and I'm not even sure legally whether you can mandate anybody to get a vaccination. Did you go down that road at all, Randy?
Well, you know, Bob, it's a good question. And, you know, look, to be honest, we explored everything. You know, we looked at the entire realm of possibilities for how we would keep our locker rooms safe and our players safe and our teams on the field. And, you know, we had consultations with legal experts, you know, on all manner of solutions. The one we came up with, we felt good about, because again, what we wanted to do was really provide an incentive, you know, really rather than being punishing anyone, we wanted to provide an incentive take an incentive based approach. But Bob, we literally had consultations with some of the brightest, you know, legal minds in the country, experts in this space. And I think we came up with the right answer for the Canadian Football League. And of course, you know, this is a complicated issue, and it's one that the entire country is facing as we go forward.
Oh, I understand. Did your lawyers tell you specifically that you could not mandate vaccines?
Well, yeah, Bob, I'll tell you, I probably at this point could qualify for a law degree
or a virologist.
You know, I mean, honestly, I think there were. I think it's very tricky, if I could say that. It's very, very tricky. And there's probably going to be some tests. You know, the thing about law, as you come to appreciate it, is you can do something. It's what happens after.
And of course.
And what would a human rights tribunal, for example, say? What would the court say? So, you know, you can do something, but then you run the risk of the potential backlash. So, you know, what you try to do is get a piece of advice, get the advice that you're comfortable that you can, that will hold up if challenged.
One of the things, John and I, you and I talked about this a long, long time ago. I think I brought it up, and that was a precedent setting case where someone is fired from their job or not allowed to go back to work until they get vaccinated, and then they challenge that in a court of law. Are either of you aware of that having happened? I'm not, no.
Well, at present, I'm not sure it has, but Bob, I am aware that there is there's the possibility of that happening sometime quite soon. I've been briefed on the possibility that that there is a one of the human rights tribunals is actually looking at that right now, at whether or not to take up that cause.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting and precedent setting, and whatever that's going to mean going down the road.
The Sorry, fascination John. Is there are private businesses, large private businesses in both Canada and the United States, Walmart for one, Disney for another, that have mandated if you come to work, you have to be vaccinated. And so there seems to be working in there seems to be a double standard at times that seems to be working its way out. And, you know, is there a chance, Randy, that this might change as the season goes on, or is this something that you're between you and the Players Association you've dealt with and you're going to deal with it for the 14 game schedule?
Yeah, I think for this issue, it's the way it's going to be for the balance of the season. Look, we're always going to be open to better solutions if they come our way. Look, I'm heading to Winnipeg later this morning, and I'm going to spend a good part of the game sitting with Brian Ramsey from the CFLPA, and you know, we're going to watch football and talk about the league and the season, and we're always going to be open and interested in solutions. But for now, I'd say this will be the policy. But there, you know, there are other things in the player safety realm. You know, what restrictions can we loosen as more players get vaccinated? What privileges can we offer the players that are vaccinated that say we may not be able to offer to the unvaccinated? All of these things will evolve as the season goes along.
Has it been difficult to get American players in?
No, actually that actually was quite, you know, was quite, well, again, a real credit to Greg Dick and his staff and our teams. That actually went very well. And again, we had, we had a highly collaborative effort with the Public Health Agency of Canada. They were very collaborative. All of the provincial health authorities were helpful. We had to get relief on the immigration front. That went well. There's been a lot of really good work and a lot of really good people, frankly, a lot of really good people in government that have helped us. And so, you know, today we're at the doorstep of a new season and a new beginning for the league. And, you know, frankly, that's the part I'm most excited about.
Randy Ambrosia is the commissioner of the Canadian Football League. We'll come back with more after these messages. It's McCallum, it's Shannon with the commissioner of the CFL, Randy Ambrosia, is with us. One of the intriguing things about sitting out a season, and especially in the Canadian Football League, where you would concede that probably more than any other league, players are far more transient within the league. There are a lot more player movement on a regular basis. So fans are sort of used to it. But they're in for a bit of a culture shock, I think, it's fair to say. After being away for a year, losing that touch with the familiarity of everybody except probably their star players. And then a lot of movement has happened over that period of time within your league. What do you think the impact of that will be?
Well, Bob, I think the answer is, I just think our fans want to watch CFL football. And mm-hmm. And my guess is that when they show up at the stadium in Winnipeg tonight and at Mosaic tomorrow night in Regina and in Calgary and Edmonton, they just want to watch CFL football and they want to cheer for their team. So, you know, I think a lot of those things, might have mattered more under different circumstances, but I think they're going to cheer for their teams. I think they're going to be excited to watch football. I was at an event last night, and it's all people could talk about is how much they were excited to, you know, turn the game on tonight, turn on to TSN and watch the game or be in one of our stadiums coming up. So Bob, I think a lot of that I'm not worried about because I think people just wanted to get their football back and they're excited for us. Look, it's one of the issues, candidly, that we want to talk about in the next CBA discussions with our players and how do we create more stability? How do we create an incentive system so that we can keep our players in our communities for a long haul? Those are going to be really positive discussions with the players because one of the things we're learning and trying really hard to do is to think about, the alignment of interests. How do we do things together that are going to be, make it better for everybody in the long term? I'm really looking forward to those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Actually, you beat me to it. I was going to, if you're sitting down with Brian, where is this just a single year CBA because of COVID or how is this working?
Well, we had to make adjustments to accommodate some of the special circumstances for this year. So it's the same CBA, but it had to be adjusted and we did have to negotiate specific terms that related to a shortened season and other things of that nature. This CBA expires before training camp next year. So we're going to have an opportunity to do a reset and really work together. And, you know, Brian and I, agreed to you know, we're going to meet tonight in Winnipeg and watch a game. We're actually going to try to, you know, get together every couple of weeks for the most of the season, really just spend time talking about the future together and sharing ideas. And that way, by the time we do get our negotiating teams together, hopefully we've set a really good foundation for the future.
The nine stadiums, where are you with attendance? What are we going to expect tonight, for instance, in Winnipeg?
Well, Winnipeg doesn't have any restrictions with the exception that you have to be able to show your double vaccinated certificate. In fact, wow. In Winnipeg, they've issued, I think it's a QR code that everyone who's had a double vaccination has. So you have to show that as evidence. You'll have to show ID and then your ticket. In Saskatchewan, there are no restrictions. So Mosaic, they've announced a sellout at Mosaic in Regina for Friday night. And in Calgary, in Alberta, there's no restrictions. So we're going to see great attendance in both Calgary and in Edmonton. As you know, we did adjust our season so that we went west early on. You know, in Ontario, for example, right now, if we played a game today, they would be allowed 15,000 in all three of Ottawa, Toronto, and Hamilton. We're hoping that'll improve before we actually get games played there. Similarly, 15,000 is a number in Quebec, so that would apply to the Alouettes in Montreal. So, you know, all the jurisdictions are different. I know, again, talking to Dr. Henry last night, you know, they are hoping that they can make adjustments to their, you know, to their conditions as the situation improves. And it's, again, one of the reasons why we're encouraging everyone to get a vaccination, because that's the one thing that's going to allow public health officials more comfort that they can allow more people to gather.
Actually, is that something you as a league or the teams can say, that we're only going to allow double vaccinated people into the stadium?
It's not an issue that the teams can control. It has to be done by the local health authorities.
Okay.
Well, you mean the teams could not mandate that themselves?
No, it has got to be done. It has got to be done at the local health authority level.
That's interesting. Doesn't seem quite right, but nonetheless. One of the other issues that my friend Shannon and I have discussed, and I don't doubt that you have had a level of involvement or have been aware of, is the changing of nicknames. And we've gone through this in North America for some period of time. There have been two fairly significant ones of the recent past. Of course, the Cleveland Indians are going to become the Guardians. And in your league, the Edmonton Eskimos are now the Edmonton Elks. Tell me what your role was, what the league's role was in that. Well, let's start with that.
Yeah, it, to be honest, Bob, very limited. Look, the Edmonton's board, you know, they were collaborative and consultative with us, but in the end, that was their choice to make. It wasn't a choice for the league to make, and they kept us informed every step of the way. You know, they advised us what their thoughts were, and they did, you know, at a point well ahead of the announcement, let us know that they were going to be making the change. But it wasn't a league issue. It was a team issue, and you know, our job was to be supportive of whatever decision that the team made, and we support the decision that they made in Edmonton.
How difficult is that from a league perspective, a marketing perspective, when it comes to collateral? I mean, that's in the end, when the league distributes merchandise, that's where, you know, leagues need time to be able to do that. Perhaps what was the issue there?
Yeah, John, I would just say, you know, real credit to Edmonton for how collaborative they were. So we were really ready when, you know, by the time they, you know, got to the rollout, all of the issues around, you know, marketing, all the issues around merchandising had already been well handled, because they gave us lots of notice, and we worked with them on solutions that would, you know, that would facilitate a fairly seamless transition. You know, again, it was a decision that Edmonton felt was in their best long-term interest. They wanted to be sensitive to the, you know, to the marketplace and to the community. And our job was to support their decision.
I'm inclined to say one more question, but I'm really one more topic, except my friend Shannon, who's smiling there invariably, does not allow me to have the last question, Mr. Ambrosia.
Randy knows that.
He will jump in with something ridiculous too, just so he can say he ended the conversation. That being the case, one of the issues that surfaced, and I don't even remember the timeline anymore, you'll forgive me, this COVID thing, as everybody, we don't know what day of the week it is. But there was talk of a partnership with the U.S. Football League, the XFL. Yep. Specifically. Now, I just for the record, the CFL, as you well know, has gone down this path once before. And I happened to be in Sacramento for the first CFL game played there with that expansion process, which essentially failed when all was said and done. Where are you with the XFL? Is that an ongoing conversation? Tell me what you know.
Well, first of all, Bob, I can tell you that this finger, as you can see it, I got that in Sacramento. Well, I had the finger before I went to Sacramento, but I have this new design.
Was very attractive too, Randy, by the way.
Yeah, it was awarded to me in Sacramento at that very game that you described. So we both have a souvenir from that experience. It was a productive, very, very constructive conversation with the XFL. But in the end, we decided it was time for both leagues to focus on their own futures. The XFL wants to, want to get their league up and running. We got a great league and we got a great history. And I think we've got a great future. And, whether or not we talk again at some point down the road, I don't know. What I can tell you is they were professional and thoughtful. They were very engaged. But at some point, if you don't see something happening imminently, it's time to kind of get on with your own business. And that's what we decided to do. Certainly, I don't regret having talked to them. There were some really interesting ideas that we shared and ideas that can perhaps be, part of our future strategy in the CFL. But for the time being, they're going to try to get their league up and running. And we've got a league to run, one with a great, as they say, a great history. And I believe a really great future.
I know so, you can't be definitive, but would you say that COVID scuttled the possibility of a deal being done?
Oh, Bob, I don't think we should. I think we can blame COVID for a lot of things. I'm not running the same marathon time that I used to run, and I'm going to blame that on COVID. That's
a boy. Yeah.
But I'm going to say, I don't think we would blame COVID on that. It would be to do what anything that we might've thought we would want to do would have been complicated. And in the end, it was just two leagues decided that we should build our own futures for now. And who knows, maybe down the road, we talk again.
Okay. Where are you with Halifax, Randy?
That group are remarkably engaged. The Schooner Sports and Entertainment Group, we're talking to them frequently. Obviously, they knew that we couldn't spend any real time on the Halifax opportunity while we were going through COVID, but they are there. They have made it very clear that they are interested in joining the league. They have a plan. We agreed that after we get the season up and running, we would re-engage with them. It'll be part of an overall plan that we're going to share with the league governors in August, and we'll talk about this. But I think there's a dynamic opportunity to have our 10th team, in Halifax, and that group are highly committed.
And they still have stadium issues though.
Well, they do have stadium issues, but I'm happy to report that they have a plan for for a stadium, one that's, that they said at the appropriate time. And again, they were great because they totally understood that we couldn't dedicate a lot of time to that project while we were in the middle of our own, of our own crisis. But they're telling us that they have a plan and they're looking forward to sharing it with us.
So it's interesting. You talked about how you're going to start the schedule in the West, because let's face it, that is right now the cornerstone of the league. That's not a knock at Hamilton or Ottawa, where football is still really prevalent, but your three largest markets, Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver, really need to try to rebuild some relevancy with the CFL. How can you help your three owners do that in those cities?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm excited for all three markets. I think there's a path forward for all three markets. I spent some time with Rick Lalisher just this past couple of days, and I think there's a real positive energy there. I had spent a lot of time with David Braley before he passed away, and David and I got to know David, and both he and I agreed there was a big opportunity for the BC Lions, and of course he passed away, and we were right in the middle of the COVID crisis. There's a path forward for BC. I'm very excited for Montreal. For Gary Stern lost his partner this past week in Sid Spiegel. Very, you know, our hearts go out to Gary and his family. But we're excited about what we think Gary and his leadership team there can do. And we've seen, of course, the major renaissance of football under, you know, Larry Smith as an example. You know, really what they did there and how powerful football became. And I'm just very bullish on football in Toronto. I think there, you know, we've got a great partner in MLSE. We've got some work to do. One of the reasons that I've been excited about our 2.0 international strategy is that I think we do need to make the CFL bigger. I think in Toronto, which is, you know, a market with so much choice, I think you got to compete and you got to have a bigger concept. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that we're going to be talking about in all of our cities, but certainly our biggest markets. We're going to be talking about how do we activate that strategy. We were at the beginning of some success. If you go back to 2019, which seems like a lifetime ago now, but we were at the beginning of some success there. Now we get our teams back on the field this weekend, and we can start re-engaging in some of our strategies.
Perhaps I should know this, but with Mr. Braley passing, where does ownership fit with the Lions?
Well, David before passing made it clear to the executor of his estate that he wanted to see the BC Lions. He wanted them to survive and prosper, and he wanted to find them in. He wanted ultimately to set them into hands with local ownership, very committed to the future of that franchise. So, you know, I met with David's executor last week. They're very committed to that idea. I think there's good news on the horizon there, and looking forward to great BC Lions football for many, many years to come.
Anything else, John? Let me.
Oh, I know. You know, the last time that Randy was on, we talked about that we needed to bring the 5-year import rule back, and I noticed Randy in that you brought a 3-year rule back, correct? So yeah. If you're with the same team for 3 years, you're able to stay. So yeah. I don't think we have any more ideas for Randy right now.
Oh, we have plenty of ideas. I mean,
but Randy's always able and always wanting to listen, which is great.
Yeah. You know what, guys, there's no shortage of opportunities to take this league. So if you two can start putting your heads together, you got to get some new material, because we're in the market for good ideas that help elevate our game.
New material. We're never going to have new material. We're three old white guys. Come on now.
I used up all my good material. Right. And a lot of it happened in Sacramento, where you got your finger busted up.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Listen, we always appreciate your time. We know it's not easy to take a half an hour out of your day, but we greatly appreciate it. We'll let you rest for a while, and maybe we'll touch base mid-season and see how things are going, if that's okay.
Thank you very much, guys. In the meantime, best wishes to you and your families.
Same to you, Randy. The Commissioner of the Canadian Football League, Randy Ambrosia. We'll come back with more after this. And we're back. Our thanks to Mr. Ambrosi for...
I don't think he's taking us too seriously about our ideas, though, Bob.
I don't know if we had any ideas, did we?
Well, we didn't this time, but... You know,
well, I had an idea. I said, why not tell anybody who's not vaccinated to take a hike?
Yeah.
I didn't quite voice it in that way, but I wanted to be somewhat respectful to the Commissioner. But I'll tell you, if I was commissioner, why would I let a football player play who, you know, especially an American, and even more specifically a Republican, why would I let any of them come and play in my country without a vaccination? Why would I? I just don't know what the legality of that position is.
I actually thought you had to, you know, with the rules coming in, I thought you have to be vaccinated to come into our country.
Well, you don't really. All you got to do is, you know, you got to have a deal with the federal government, and then you got to, I assume quarantine for 14 days.
Yeah, I guess. But we probably should have asked Randy, and he probably couldn't have told us what percentage of the people non-vaccinated are American versus Canadian.
Well, I thought about asking that, but, you know, let me put it to you this way. Most.
Yeah. Well, and you know, in watching some of the press conferences of NFL coaches who are very frustrated because the rules that Randy has put in place are similar to the rules that are going to be in place in the National Football League, except teams under the threshold in the United States will lose paychecks. If you forfeit a game and you lose, you don't get a game check. That's a lot more money in the NFL than it is in the CFL.
Well, I think it's the absolute minimum they should do is, you know, if you miss a game because of COVID, you don't get paid.
Yeah. But Ron Rivera in Washington, Mike Zimmer in Minnesota, boy, they have been very public at their disappointment and frustration of their own players not to get vaccinated.
It's impossible for me to explain, and I assume you too.
Yeah, no.
In any event, that'll do it for today. We'll come back with something again tomorrow, as we usually do. We hope you'll join us for it, either by audio only as a podcast, or you can find it in video under Fadoo Podcasts. Just go to the site, Fadoo Podcasts, and there's a place to click, and you draw it down, and you can, for reasons I can't explain, you might want to watch us rather than listen to us.
Can't explain that.
I can't explain it either. Whatever way, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye, everybody.